This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. In 2003, Dr. Christopher Lewis traveled to Tanzania during his residency training at the University of Cincinnati. He worked at a hospital in a rural village and quickly discovered how difficult it was for anyone in the surrounding areas to access health care. In the next 6 years, he made 8 trips back to Tanzania and founded the nonprofit Village Life Outreach Project. The group partners with the residents of 3 villages implementing sustainable projects to fight poverty and improve health and educational outcomes. I recently talked with UC College of Medicine Associate Professor of Family Medicine, Dr. Christopher Lewis, UC Department of Emergency Medicine Associate Professor, Dr. Stuart Wright, and UC Environmental Engineering student, Grace Aldridge, about the Village Life Outreach Project. Well, Dr. Chris Lewis from UC and Dr. Stuart Wright and Grace Aldridge, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. It's really good to have you here today.
Thank you, Dan. It's great to be here.
Chris, how did Village Life get started? I mean, what was the origins of this initiative, this project?
Well, Dan, I'm a local Cincinnati guy. I went to Finneytown High School and away for college, but came back from medical school. And it was in my training in residency in family medicine right after medical school that I got exposed to the concept of global health, the concept of developing long-term relationships with communities that might need a little assistance, the concept of doing so in a fashion that focuses on community-oriented primary care. The residency program here at UC for family medicine has a global health track where the residents get training on how to do all of that and some field experiences. Then the third and final year of the program, the residency gives students or residents a stipend to travel anywhere in the world they want to travel to try to test their skills. I traveled to this site in Tanzania, spent a month working there.
Was there a particular reason that you chose Tanzania?
I was originally looking to do a project in South Africa. And at the time that I was planning this trip, 2003, the political unrest and turmoil, even Oprah Winfrey canceled her trip. So to appease my mother, I chose a backup site. And some of the residents
Mothers
that I worked
important.
With. Yes, indeed. Some of the residents I had worked with had been to this site before. There is a U.S.-trained family physician named Dr. Esther Kawira, who's been living and working in Tanzania for about 30 years. She's from Goshen, Indiana, and she is a wizard of teaching doctors, medical students, residents, and nursing, and pretty much anybody about how to deliver care in an under-resourced setting such as Tanzania.
Dr. Wright, you're on the board as well as having gone to Tanzania.
Yes.
So were you into the global health niche as well, or what drew you personally to this effort?
It was actually quite by happenstance. One of my partners at the Department of Emergency Medicine up at UC was all set to go, and she got pregnant, actually, and she was keeping it to herself. And so she asked me very much on the sly and at 2 o'clock in the morning one night when we were staffing the emergency department together, could I go in her place in this coming October? This is now 5 years ago. Uh-huh. And I went once and have been back every year since, and this year I'm planning to go 3 times. So it has a way of drawing you in, these villages, this group that we've built, the impact that we've had, I think, has been impressive.
What's the vision here? What are you trying to do when we talk about global health? Are you going over and you're delivering health services, or is it different than that?
It started off with the main focus on global health, and we quickly learned through conversations with the communities that we serve in Tanzania that health is part of a bigger issue. So we look at social determinants of health and look at education, access to clean water, other resources like that, housing, employment. So by design, initially we looked at healthcare, but the efforts grew beyond healthcare. The vision is 2 parts. One part is partnering with people in Tanzania to provide resources, assistance, technical know-how. The second part is utilizing what we learn from them to make us better people and bringing those lessons that we learn, lessons of humanity, lessons of service, lessons of community, back home to our Cincinnati community. The Tanzanian measure of wealth is not how much money you have or how big your house is. It's what are you doing for your community? And so those lessons really resonated with me. after my first trip. And I think Grace and Stuart here can attest to that as well, that concept that you go there thinking you're going to change someone's life, and your life is the one that ends up getting changed.
Grace, you're a fifth-year engineering student.
Yes.
You're not in the medical school. You're not in the medical professions. What is it that drew you into this?
So coming to UC, I chose to I particularly chose a school that had a strong Engineers Without Borders chapter.
Engineers Without Borders.
Yes. And Engineers Without Borders, our UC chapter, partners with Village Life Outreach Project to work on the water distribution systems. And that was kind of what Dr. Lewis was alluding to, in that there's a lot more to this than just healthcare. And I think what Village Life started to realize was that for a more comprehensive grasp of what global health actually looks like, there are some basic needs that need to be addressed as well as healthcare, one of them being water. So Engineers Without Borders is the group that Village Life decided to partner with to start developing that in these communities.
So what does that mean, water distribution? Is it water purification? Is it water distribution to more households, mm-hmm. more villages? What does that mean in that situation?
So what it means is basically supplying or helping the community establish a reliable source of potable water. So as opposed to them just collecting rainwater for their drinking water, or, you know, I've seen, and I'm sure that Dr. Wright and Dr. Lewis have seen as well, people and children collecting buckets of water from, you know, mud puddles, essentially. So what EWB was focusing on was drilling borehole wells in each of these communities and then building. We have a lot of civil engineering and environmental engineering majors in our group, so we really focused on testing the water from the borehole wells and then building pipeline networks to distribute it to the community via tap stands, tanks, and we've continued to expand those networks over the past 6 or 7 years.
So is the water that you get from borehole well in this particular area of Tanzania, is it drinkable without treatment if it's coming from those wells?
Yes, it is. And we always perform tests. We look at multiple different sources in an area, and then we use our water tests to figure out which one is the cleanest and is free of microbes and bacteria. So we perform all those tests before we decide on a source for the well. And then, yes, it is clean. And I know because I have actually drank it. So, you know,
so
last
it's not
summer.
Just the people who live there drink it. Can the people going in your groups drink it?
Well, yes, they can, but we don't really want to necessarily take away from sure. the community. So I think that's discouraged when we go on the Village Life trips. But when I was there for a whole summer in 2017, there were times where we ran out of our bottled water and the community did offer us water from the tap stand.
There are a couple of very innovative things about the work that EWB is doing with Village Life in Tanzania, Dan. Number one, to see students applying classroom knowledge to solving real-world problems that result in thousands of people having their first access to a reliable, clean source of water is just mind-blowing. Secondly, EWB and Village Life don't necessarily come in and do these projects and run them without input and buy-in and support from the communities. In this particular case with the water distribution systems, the coolest part about it is that the communities themselves really receive training from Village Life and EWB on how to run and maintain, repair, evaluate the system, and keep it going on their own. It's very, very sustainable in that way.
Mm-hmm. And so, we do multiple assessment trips as well, and we do community surveys and questionnaires trying to figure out what exactly the community's needs are, locations that they think the water source should be, how much water they need to sustain the community. So there's a lot of assessment that goes in before we actually implement the projects.
Dr. Wright, Stuart Wright, what was the first time you went, which you hadn't spent months preparing for because it kind of got surprised with that first time? How was it different than what you thought you were going to be? What were you most taken aback by?
Well, I think Chris alluded to, you go with an idea that you're going to change the world, at least one small part of it. And I certainly had those thoughts in my mind. I'd done a small amount of global health before, so I wasn't completely naive. But But I had that thought for sure. And I was leading a group of residents from my department and medical students and so forth. And so I was in my mind preparing myself as a leader of this trip. But by the time we came to the first or second or third evening, I found that the best learning that I was doing for myself was in the evenings when we would actually debrief about what we had seen, what we had done, who we had seen, who we had treated, and what we felt about those experiences that really resonated with me. And the way this group Village Life had put together the experiences so that everybody can self-reflect and have that time to grow from the experience during the trip and then apply those learnings the next day when you go back to the villages, it really hit home with me. And as you can see, I've now stayed with the group for quite a while, and we hope to continue this for a long time.
Chris, you've been at this now for about 15 years in the area of health. I mean, Grace was just describing what's being done with engineering, with public health, with water supply, which is really basic and very important. But in the area of medical quality of service in the villages that you serve, how has that changed in the 15 years, and what have you done to change it in a viable way so that it's not just always Americans sort of dropping in on this?
Well, we started off with smaller projects that we wanted to have some demonstrated success with so that we could prove to donors, prove to the communities, prove to ourselves that we could actually accomplish some things. Distribution of mosquito nets, for example, schistosomiasis treatment campaigns, targeted interventions at the community level. And upon having a little bit of success with those sorts of smaller projects, we finally got folks with big pockets on our team. UC Health stepped up in a major, major way, over $1 million in support over 5 years to help us build a health center in partnership with the University of Cincinnati, UC Health, and the communities that we serve. This health center is in Roche Village. It's called the Roche Health Center, and it is fully run and staffed by Tanzanian folks. Now, they do appreciate when our teams from Cincinnati travel with them, and there's a bi-directional learning that happens. We teach them, they teach us, and the setup there is quite profound.
Are there doctors on the Tanzanian staff?
Correct. We have a full-time doctor, a nurse midwife, I think 4 nurse assistants, and looking to hire more.
So, Grace, what was your biggest surprise going in? I don't know, when was the first time you went, for one thing? You said you spent a whole summer in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But when was the first time you went? And it sounds like even coming into UC, you had some interest in this Engineering Without Borders and had some, you were already, mentally, you were already committed.
Yes.
But going to these villages, what was it that you experienced?
So the first time I went was in 2015. That was right after my freshman year, and I went on a trip with EWB for an assessment trip for the Niambogo Water Project, which is another one of the villages that we serve with Village Life. And then I would say a lot of things surprised me initially, but I was more struck by my experience in 2017, by actually being fully immersed in the culture for a long period of time. I would say what surprised me the most, working on a construction site, my partner Paige Sumser, who was there over the summer, and myself, we were working together to with the community to construct sanitary latrines at a primary school in Roche, which is where the health center is as well. And I think I was most surprised by the eagerness of individuals in the community to learn. And it was interesting because they really had a lot more to teach us, as Dr. Wright and Dr. Lewis have said. They had a lot more to teach us about the infrastructure in the community, the materials, the type of labor, all these things. They knew way more about it than Paige and I knew. And they were just very, very eager to hear our ideas, because we were working with professionals back in the United States as well. So they were eager to hear what we brought to the table, as well as eager to teach us. And they were pretty surprised when Paige and I wanted to learn how to mix concrete, for example, or pick up the shovel and start digging the pits for the latrines and everything. They were pretty surprised as to American women. I think they were pretty surprised by that, but they were incredibly accepting and eager to teach us because...
Were they surprised because of their image of American women, or were they surprised because of gender roles in their society?
I would say a little bit of both, because the women over there are definitely, as anyone who's been can attest to, are incredibly hardworking, even with manual labor. A lot of the wives were on our construction site as well, and we were paying them all for their labor, of course, during the construction of the latrines. But I would say they were probably more surprised by the fact that we were Americans, more so by the fact that we were women. And I think some of these people hadn't necessarily been around village life or EWB up to that point, so they weren't really accustomed to people coming in and really wanting to work hard as well. And there were definitely lots of jokes made about, oh, the Americans are working way harder than we thought they could. And they call us Mzungus there. So that's their word for Americans.
And what is it again?
Mzungu.
What's the language?
Swahili.
Swahili. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Stuart, give us a little bit better picture of how many villages are involved, how many people live in those villages, how tightly connected are the villages, if at all. I'm not quite sure. I know that they're sort of in the same general area of Tanzania.
They are. We sort of interface with three villages that we serve and one that we stay in, which would be a fourth village, of course. The three that we serve are Niambogo, Barere, and Roche, as we've already heard. They're not exactly right next to each other, but they're all within the same district of Tanzania, the Rora district. Mm-hmm. They all face a lot of the same health issues, malaria, schistosomiasis, other infectious diseases, as you might imagine. But they do have some different challenges as well. One of the villages is right on Lake Victoria, so water supply is not necessarily their first issue. Niambogo has a very poor water supply. Roche had no access to health care when village life first started there. So that's why each village sort of chose their own wildly important goal, if you will, as to what they could interface with village life to achieve. And so Niambogo has the nice large well that you've heard about already. Roche has the health center. And in Barere, they really had a great desire for a school. And so village life has provided them with a school building designed and built and so forth with the help of Engineers Without Borders. So each village is different, connected through village life, but they're far enough apart to where I don't think they would run across each other commonly. Roche is unique in that it sits between the two other villages. And so our health center being there is convenient that we can, in the very near future.
So how many people live in that area around in the three villages and whatever the surrounding area is?
Chris, you'll have to help me here.
But it's about 20 to 25,000 people is the area that we serve in a district of about 350,000 people.
And so is the health facility in Roche, is that the major health facility for that area?
It is. And we partner with the district hospital. That's about an 8 to 10 hour walk away, and most of the folks don't have access to transportation. So there is a hospital in the district, but for most people out in the outlying regions, it's inaccessible. And that's really how village life got started. My experience in Tanzania in 2003, 4 month, when I was a resident at UC, was working at the hospital. But I saw the need from people, you know, trying to access the hospital and dying along the way. And so by design, we focused on those outlying regions.
So you say people were walking. I mean, would that still be true today, 15 years later, that's the major way that people are going to get around in this area as opposed to public transit of some kind?
You see a lot more bicycles and you see a whole lot more motorcycles nowadays that people use, kind of like a cab system. But the walking is significant. One of the first patients that I saw when I was a resident back in 2003 when I was working at the hospital was a pregnant mother who was trying to walk about 8 hours while hemorrhaging in labor. And she died trying to make that trip. So when people talk about village life and, you know, our successes, and oftentimes I get the question, what's the most significant accomplishment? I look to the picture of the first baby born at Roche Health Center and point to that as our biggest success, because now people don't have to make that same walk anymore.
So the one village is interested in had a real priority for education. You know, we've got an engineer, we've got two doctors here. What's the commitment on the educational front?
Well, as Stuart alluded to, Engineers Without Borders has been very active in the region, in Barere Village, building a new school. I think there's some more classrooms that could be used and some more latrines that could be used. We're doing another water project there to supply the students in the school with clean water. We have a nutrition project that feeds about 2,500 kids every day. It's interesting. You might think that you have all the answers. Living in Cincinnati is such a philanthropic community. Our folks that get involved on the Cincinnati side oftentimes come with great ideas. And when we first gathered our education committee, I remember a lot of talk about, let's get, you know, every kid a laptop. Let's get these supplies. Mm-hmm. Let's build this. Let's give these resources. When we sat down with the communities, they said, well, all that stuff would be great, but first, can you help us just get these kids some food? Because we're talking about children who sometimes walk up to 3 hours one way to get to school. They come on an empty stomach. There's no school feeding program. They're not going to walk 3 hours home to get lunch and come back. So can you help us? And that really changed our perspective on what we were really there for.
Wow. So the engineering is built into the schools, into the education effort, because you helped build the schools, and some engineering students someplace, our professors were involved in that, right, Grace?
Yes, that's true. So it was Engineers Without Borders who worked on, actually before I came to UC, they had worked on the Bereri Schoolhouse. And something that I love about the, Dr. Lewis already kind of talked about this, but it is very community oriented. So we have a team of engineering students that go over to implement these projects. And then it's really amazing how you see the community come together. So we kind of communicate with the committees, the local committees there, and we say, hey, we need these materials by this time. We need the trenches for the pipelines dug. We need the concrete foundations poured. We need all that to be done by the time we get there so that we have enough time to actually finish the project out. So it's really cool to see how the community comes together and how eager they are to learn.
What's the economy in this particular area? And if you can provide some of these basic services and make it easier for people to have water and some education and access to health care. Is there an economy there that can support people in the long run?
Not a good one. Yeah. Most people are living hand to mouth.
Really?
Subsistence farmers, fishing is a big industry there. You're talking about families that don't expect that all their children are going to live. You're talking about families that day to day think about food, think about hunger, think about sickness and death. The latest thing that we've been working on with the communities, we always knew that education was a big thing for all of the communities, and we have been focused on educating the children. Now that we've had some success on meeting some of these basic needs, the biggest outcry from the communities that they want to partner with us on is training for trades and vocations for the adults.
Mm-hmm. And is there an idea about what trades and that you would really want to focus on? What would be useful in this area?
They've got a gazillion ideas.
They've got a gazillion ideas.
And what we hope to do as an organization, now that we have office space in the new 1819 Innovation Hub at the University of Cincinnati and have some robust connectivity and communication equipment in that office space, we're really hoping to see if we can provide some of that training to the communities through our office here in Cincinnati at the university.
One last question. If you're not directly connected to UC, and you're not a doctor and you're not an engineer, is there a role for people to play?
By all means. We are very skillful at finding a way for you to plug in. The only thing that we really look for is someone with a big heart and someone who's flexible.
And can dig a trench?
And can dig a trench.
Okay. I want to thank Dr. Chris Lewis, Dr. Stuart Wright, both from the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, and Grace Aldrich, fifth-year student in environmental engineering at UC, for being with us today, but more importantly, for the work that you're doing in Tanzania and bringing insights back to the United States. Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Dan, and thanks to the Cincinnati community and UC Health for all the support.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.